Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Loughlin. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Mario Williams has him around the waist and he drops him. Super Mario gets in on the sack party.
Yeah! Let's go, Buffalo!
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Ball into the end zone. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Aaron Williams made a leaping interception in the end zone.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Tonight on the show, a lot of focus on the draft. We're going to talk with Robert Cessna, who covers Texas A&M football. Going to ask him about Evans, Manziel, and Matthews. At 8 o'clock, more focus on the draft with Kevin Weidel from ESPN, one of their draft analysts. And Ivan Reitman, legendary director, the director of the new movie Draft Day, will join us at 8:30 tonight.
This is pandemonium.
Finds a crease up the middle, dodges the man at the 5, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A lot of focus on the draft, as we said, the draft 4 weeks from tomorrow, round one of the draft, so we're getting set. You heard the lineup. Going to talk about the Texas A&M guys in particular later on this hour with Robert Cessna, who covers Aggie football for the newspaper down there in College Station, Texas. Going to talk with our pal Kevin Weidel at 8 o'clock. He covers the entire draft. You'll be able to phone in your comments and questions for him at 8 o'clock to talk about the draft, what you like. We're going to particularly focus on the offensive linemen. That's what Kevin's been studying recently. And then at 8:30, Ivan Reitman got a great conversation with him. He's the director of the movie Draft Day, the movie that was supposed to be shot here in Buffalo, instead shot last summer in Cleveland, comes out on Friday. Ivan Reitman is the director, legendary Hollywood icon. He produced Ghost and directed Ghostbusters. He produced Animal House. He's got a long list of movie credits to his name, and he'll talk about the the almost shooting the movie here in Buffalo and some of the other Buffalo connections. He's coming up at 8:30 tonight. Want to hear from you tonight as well. A lot of speculation about the schedule. Preseason schedule came out today, the order of games anyway. We don't know the regular season schedule yet. It's going to be a couple weeks away. But there's been a lot of speculation in the last few days about what that regular season schedule might look like. In terms of a Monday night game, people are talking about that. A report at Fox Sports Wisconsin, no confirmation of that here at One Bills Drive. Some people don't think that's going to happen here at One Bills Drive. We'll find out. I mean, these things are in a state of flux. There's talk about a game at Detroit on Thanksgiving Day. No confirmation of that here at One Bills Drive. Some people here at One Bills Drive aren't sure that's going to happen either. Don't think it will. So we're all guessing. We're all guessing about the schedule. And if you'd like to really put your money where your mouth is, if you think you know the way the schedule will play out, you should go to the Buffalo Bills Schedule Challenge. It's up right now at buffalobills.com. We want you to predict the 2014 schedule. And you got to register first. You got to predict the schedule, the Buffalo Bills schedule, the exact order of all 16 games and where the bye week will fall. You can check back after the schedule is announced, a couple of weeks away here, and view your results and standings. If you correctly predict the 2014 Buffalo Bills schedule, game by game, in the order they'll be played, and the bye week, you win season tickets for life. If you correctly predict the most games, you win 2014 season tickets. So there's a lot on the line. Check it out at buffalobills.com, the Buffalo Bills Schedule Challenge at buffalobills.com. Along those lines, with all the speculation about schedules, let's hear from you. What it would be the most important thing you'd like to see on the Buffalo Bills schedule? Do you want the Thanksgiving game in Detroit? Do you want a Monday night home game? Would you like a Sunday night home game? Do you want no games at all in primetime? Some people, I mean, they're going to have to play at least a Thursday. We know that. But would you like to avoid primetime games? Do you want a Thursday night home game, Thursday night road game? What are you looking for in the Bills schedule? Is there a team you want them to open with? Is there a way you want them to finish the schedule? Is there a spot where you'd like the bye week? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Your wish list for the Buffalo Bills schedule, the 2014 Buffalo Bills schedule. Still a couple of weeks away. Lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Give us a call. Let us know what you think about the Bills schedule, how you'd like to see it start, how'd you like to see it end. You recall last year, three of the last four games were road games. Some people like that because they avoided the bad weather. Some people didn't like that because they think the Bills would lose a competitive advantage playing in the snow. We can talk about that if you'd like. The schedule, still a couple of weeks away from coming out. The year before last year, 2012, you recall, there were all those home games in December. One, Jacksonville, St. Louis, that was in Toronto, still a home game. And then, Seattle was a home. Seattle was the Toronto game. Yeah, that's right. Seattle was the Toronto game. But look at all the home games we had a couple of years ago. Jacksonville, St. Louis, Seattle, and the Jets, all of them in December. Maybe you don't like that. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. How would you like to see this Bills schedule laid out? Is there a team you're looking to see here on a particular week? Is there a team you want them to open with? A way you want the season to end? Is there a spot where the bye week belongs? Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Here's the thing. If you call the show tonight, and if we use your call on the air, we've got a special premium for you. As you know, the Draft Day movie is coming out Friday. There is a pre-screening of Draft Day, the movie, tomorrow night at Regal Quaker Crossing here in Orchard Park, right off Mile Strip Road, just around the corner from the stadium. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. If you call the show and your call gets on the air tonight, we've got two passes for you for tomorrow night's pre-screening of Draft Day, the movie, the Kevin Costner, Jennifer Garner movie. So try to make sure you can get there. You got to just show up. You don't have anything to pick up. Just show up at the theater. Your name will be on a list, and we'll have two passes for you, just two, for tomorrow night. The pre-screening, and it's only tomorrow night. This doesn't count on Friday or any other night. Tomorrow night, if you can make it, the pre-screening of Draft Day movie. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at Regal Quaker Crossing. If you dial up the show and if we use your call on the air, we're going to put your name on a list. You can show up at Regal Quaker Crossing tomorrow and pick up your two passes. Go right in. It's only valid for tomorrow night's showing. It's a $20 value for the pair. We're going to collect the names and have them on a list, a special pre-screening of Draft Day movie tomorrow night. That's a premium for anybody who calls and anybody who gets their call on the air tonight. Again, the number, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And this doesn't count for Twitter, but if you have thoughts on Twitter, you can send those in as well, at John Murphy Show. How would you like to see this Bills schedule play out? Who would you like to see them open with? Who would you like to see them finish with? Road, home, does it matter to you? Do you need a Sunday night game at home? That would be obviously the preeminent NFL showcase. Is a Monday night game something you're interested in? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 the number, or toll free 1-888-550-2550. Let's go to Brandon and Kenmore to get us started. Hi, Brandon. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm just calling. I could care less about primetime games, Sunday night games, home games, road games. We can play every game on the road. I just want wins, a playoff berth, even a loss in the first round of the playoffs. Doesn't matter. Just wins. The content of the schedule doesn't matter.
All right. Thanks for calling, Brandon. And we'll take your name and make sure that you're on the list for passes to the screening tomorrow night, and only tomorrow night, for the Draft Day movie. A couple of tweets already in on this. Nick tweets in, I don't care who, what, where, when, just win, baby, period. Let's see some attitude from this team that has started with Spikes. We'll talk with Brandon Spikes in a minute from now. Joshua Ramaker tweets in, I want a Super Bowl game. I don't care what day of the week it is. Yeah, I think a lot of us are thinking wins. Dan McCarty tweets in, home opener against the Pats. Dan Fisher tweets in, want the stadium renovations done on time. That's all I want for preseason. I think that's going to happen. We'll talk about the preseason schedule in a moment. It's set up to make sure that the stadium renovations are done in time. But give us a call if you have thoughts on what you'd like to see in the Bills schedule. It's still a couple of weeks away. And those calls that we use on the air, those callers, are welcome to join us tomorrow at the pre-screening of the Draft Day movie, 7 o'clock tomorrow at Regal Quaker Crossing. Let's go to Tim in West Seneca. Hi, Tim. Welcome. You're on the air.
I just want your opinion. I know we've made a ton of transactions, but what do you think about the tight end position? Is Moliaki or Chandler, or where do you think we go? I just want your opinion so we know what we're doing as far as the draft goes. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, they could draft a tight end in the draft in a month, 4 weeks. Yeah. That could happen. There's a pretty good chance that the best tight end in the draft, Eric Ebron, will be there at number 9 overall, if the Bills want to go that way. I'm not sure that they do. But they could draft a tight end. I think they probably want to add a tight end to the roster to go along with what they have. Tony Moiaki added to the roster at the end of last season. obviously an unknown quantity. He's got to be healthy. When he's healthy, very productive pass-catching tight end. Scott Chandler re-signs, gets a new contract for the Bills, so obviously there's interest there. I think we all know what he can provide. He's a willing blocker and a pretty good pass receiver. I think they'd like to get, you know, some help for Scott Chandler at the tight end position. But I don't know. I do think there's going to be at least one more name added to that mix. Chris Gregg, in his second year, drafted a year ago, I think we'll have something to say about playing time at the tight end position. I do anticipate one more player added to that mix before the Bills go to training camp. And we're still a couple of months away from that, obviously. Let's go to Mo in Buffalo. Hi, Mo. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. I really just want to say, man, I would love to start off with New England at home. Nothing was like that the year with Malloy here, and we won that first game against New England. I mean, you know, it was just so much excitement it started. And it gives us, you know, to be able to really get the temperature of our team and see how hungry they are this year. So that, and I'm really excited about Mike being back, Corey being back, and I'm just excited about this. This is the most excited I've been in a long time about a Bills season this early. So just looking forward to that.
All right. Thanks for your call, Mo. And last season started, obviously, with New England on the top and the bottom, the opener and the finale, and things did not work out that great. But, yeah, it's always fun to play your rivals on opening day, and there'll be no problem getting people fired up for that game in the locker room and in the stands. I'd look forward to that as well. Let's go to Bill in West Seneca. Bill, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you? I just remember years ago when we had, like, our first Monday night game after, like, 10 or 15 years of no Monday night games. The whole town was a buzz. It was, we had the Goodyear blimp was flying around. People were excited. I mean, people were in the parking lot, but it wasn't, they didn't even have a ticket, but just to be part of it. And I think a Monday night game at home against Miami would be a great way to start the Bills season.
Why Miami?
Well, I mean, maybe to get fired up again, the old rivalry we used to have with Miami, we don't have it anymore. But remember years ago, I mean, if we won against Miami, it was like we won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right, yeah.
Those were the days when the town got excited and people, you know, got thermos bottles full of hot chocolate and went down with their family and just to be on the national spotlight. Or I remember even one game, I think it was against Denver, when Chris Berman walked out on the sidelines and the town, the whole crowd roared like the president walked into town. It was just just a great feeling.
All right. Thanks very much. Monday Night Football. And last time Monday Night Football was here was that memorable loss to the Dallas Cowboys, October 8th in 2007, that last-second loss on a long field goal, a second try of a field goal, as a matter of fact. Just an electric atmosphere at Ralph Wilson Stadium that night. I don't know if the Bills will make it to Monday Night Football. You know, those are the marquee games week after week in the NFL. The Bills earn that status. They're going to be on primetime somewhere, you know, Thursday at least, maybe Sunday, maybe Monday Night Football. I don't know. We'll know in a couple of weeks. Talking to fans tonight about what you'd like to see on the Buffalo Bills schedule. We're still a couple of weeks away from the release of the Bills schedule. Lots of speculation out there, and you can participate in the speculation and the Bills schedule challenge, which up on our website right now at buffalobills.com. If you correctly predict the 2014 Bills schedule week to week, including the bye week, you win season tickets for life. If you correctly predict the most games in the right places this year, you win season tickets for this year. And tonight we're talking about it on the phone, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Mike in Orchard Park. Mike, welcome. How are you?
John, hey, hello. I would take any nationally televised game that first weekend for Buffalo. And if it was at home demonstrating what we've done to the stadium and how pumped we are to keep our team here in town with the passing of Ralph, I think that would be just phenomenal.
Why is nationally televised so important to you, Mike?
Well, because we always get such a bum rap from outside the area about Buffalo, and we are rabid Bills fans that show extremely well when on the national televised games, and we deserve that. And I think Ralph deserves that, and I think we should push hard for that if we could.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Mike. Let's take a call from Dylan in Hamburg. Hi, Dylan. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much.
I just want to say, I think these primetime games would be huge. We don't get enough press as far as, you know, we get a lot of Pro Bowl snubs. We just don't get enough primetime games. And if the league needs to see how good our players are, how good this fan base is, and we can use all the exposure we can get.
All right. I don't know. Why is that exposure important to you? By the way, I don't think they were snubbed at all in the Pro Bowl last year.
No,
Jay,
sure,
you know?
No.
Well, I think more Tico not getting defensive rookie. Yeah. I think that was a bit of a snub. I thought he played better than Sheldon.
Okay. All right. I guess I understand, you know, fans like to have their team in the national spotlight, and there's an element of the fan base is looking for recognition or affirmation that the Bills are for real, that they're playing well. They got to play well first, obviously, and all of that will come. Okay, I get it. I do think in a football sense, you don't want a whole lot of primetime games. It disrupts your schedule, I believe, especially the Thursday night games. Those are a big problem, I believe. Let's go to Bobby in Buffalo. Hi, Bobby. Welcome. You're on the air.
How you doing, John?
Good.
To see Mike Williams play his former team in primetime and light him up a little bit.
Okay. All right. I don't think we're playing Tampa Bay this year, right?
I don't know.
No.
But that would be nice.
Preseason, right?
Really be nice.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for your call. Thanks for your call. No, I don't think Tampa Bay's on the schedule this year, but that's okay. We're taking phone calls. What you'd like to see in the Bills' schedule? Joseph Santura tweets in: primetime home games are more important than ever. We need to show the world the Bills belong in Buffalo and nowhere else. All right, I get that. 420 fan tweets in: this is kind of interesting. I want to see a few less games against teams coming off a bye week. That was an issue last year. That was an issue for the Bills last year. Playing teams that had extra time to prepare for the game. That was definitely an issue last year. Let's go to Nate in Hamburg. Hi, Nate. You're on the air.
It's funny that that was just brought up, and that was my question. If that being last year, teams coming off the bye week, if that's going to have any effect on the schedule this year. And also, after the passing of Ralph, there was a lot of older players and a lot of people saying that even at 95, Ralph still was in it. Still had it, still joked around. So I guess my question is, if he was still in it, wouldn't he have a plan in place for the team? It just seems silly that if he was really active and into it, he would have something set. Even I'll hang up and listen. Thanks,
Wait, before you leave, you mean a succession plan, Nate? Is that what you mean?
Yes, yeah, just something for where a new owner, I guess. Yeah. I just think that he would have had something in place. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks. All right. Yeah, I don't really have the answer to that. I do know this, that the tax implications are so large that it's hard to pass along the team to your heirs and avoid having a huge tax hit. And I think, again, I have no idea what's the plan is. It hasn't been revealed to anybody yet. But I think that probably played into Mr. Wilson's plan, which included, as he said publicly over the last couple of years, the sale of the team, so to avoid a huge tax hit. It could be argued, and I would argue this, that by signing the lease a year ago and by locking in the Bills for now six more seasons and over all like a 10-year period, that was his plan to ensure that after his passing that there'd be an opportunity for the next owner to see if it works in Buffalo, to see if Buffalo can make build a new stadium or fix the old stadium up enough to keep a team going in there. So I might argue that would be a part of it, not a succession plan, but his plan for the future, that he didn't just leave Buffalo high and dry, that they did sign a fairly long-term lease in December of 2012, And that is all part of the outlook of where we move on from here. Thanks very much for your call. Mike in West Seneca. Hi, Mike. Welcome. You're on the air. Are you there, Mike? Not there yet. Let's go to Mario in Buffalo. Hi, Mario.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay.
You know, for me, first of all, I'm excited to hear what Spike said today. To me, that brings energy to me. I love the fact that, you know, people are making a big deal out of what he said. You know, well, we haven't beat the Patriots in so long, whatever. But listen, when we were quiet, we got our butts kicked. So why don't we try talking a little, and maybe that may help us win some games. So either way you look, it's not like New England's going to take it easy on us whether we talk or not. So I'm all for it. I like the fact that he's here and also Peppers with the defense. I think they can come up with some good schemes. And I'm excited to see what Mike Williams will do. And I'm excited to see us have even if Graham goes into the slot, we have a bigger slot cornerback. So, for me, I'm excited. I can't wait for the draft. I still want them to get the big receiver for A&M. Probably is not going to happen now. But I'm excited about the season.
All right. Thanks, Mario. And his, in case you missed it, Brandon Spikes, new Bills linebacker, a couple of tweets today about the Bills-Patriots matchups. One of them said, great games on the schedule, but it's going to be like Christmas to hand the Patriots a loss twice. Another one, he said, it's icing on my cake to hand the Patriots two big L's this year. And then another one said, 4 years a slave, referring to his 4 years in New England, and obviously a reference to the movie 12 Years a Slave. Brandon Spikes, he is very active on Twitter, not afraid to do some trash talking in the month of April. Mike in West Seneca. Hi, Mike. Now you're on the air. Hey. How you doing?
Good, John. How are you?
Good.
You know, I've been watching the Bills for an awful lot of years, and I think until, as the saying goes, we're ready for primetime, maybe we should stay away from primetime this year. I mean, Sundays seem to work pretty well. It's consistent. They're a young building team. I don't know that they necessarily need the distraction or the other issues that come with, a Thursday night game and a Monday night game. And honestly, you know, prime time is great, but you know, I can't tell you how I can't stand watching them lose on prime time. So, you know, everybody harkens back to the glory years. But those were the good teams. I mean, those teams won. I remember going into the Jets, and it was almost a guaranteed win. And in Miami, you were going to win on Monday night. But that's just not the team that we seem to have. So my opinion is, at least for this year while they're building, stay on Sunday, stay playing Sundays, and then hopefully next year they'll be ready for some big-time games.
Okay, thanks for your call. That's an argument to be made, and there is a distraction factor when it comes to primetime games. Everybody's going to have to play primetime at one point during the season. I mean, the lowest profile primetime games are going to be those Thursday night games in the second half of the year, the ones that are on NFL Network as opposed to now the new CBS package on Thursday nights. Sunday nights being the highest profile, probably followed by Monday nights after that. But everybody's going to have a look at primetime this year. We know that. There is a distraction factor. I would say that teams need to players need to know how to handle those games, to handle a short schedule or an off schedule, or to travel and play on a Monday night, to spend that long day waiting for the game. I think good teams in the NFL and professional football need to learn how to handle that. And, it's one of the things you have to do in pro football now. Mike in West Seneca. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Great.
I disagree with other callers that are saying we need to play New England the first game. I was actually there last year for the opener, and not that we played horrible, but I really think that some of the players' egos are a little bit tender, such as EJ and maybe some other players specifically. But I still think we need to play a division team like obviously the Jets or Miami, because I think that's going to help. A victory is going to help us to kind of get out of the gates fast. And especially with EJ, I think that it's going to go a long way for him to, help him with his confidence, honestly.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call. The take it easy approach. People are kind of all over the board on this, it seems, on what they'd like to see in the schedule. Some people crave the limelight, want to see that, that primetime game, want to see their favorite players showcased on primetime. Others, like the last caller, say, let's ease into it a little bit. Let's not jump right into primetime performances. It's interesting how people are all over the board. We'll know for sure in a couple of weeks when the schedule comes out. And that means you have a couple of weeks to put your own stamp on the schedule and maybe win some great prizes. It's up on BuffaloBills.com, the Bills Schedule Challenge, a chance to predict the 2014 season for the Bills. Register online at BuffaloBills.com. Submit your prediction of the entire 2014 Bills schedule. You got to try to correctly predict the exact order of all 16 games and the bye week. If you do that, you win season tickets for life. And whoever correctly predicts the most games wins season tickets for next year. We'll talk more about this as the night goes along. We'll keep phone lines open for most of the night as we talk about the Bills schedule and what you'd like to see in the Bills schedule. But we're going to take a break and talk about the draft, and in particular, the draft prospects from Texas A&M. Robert Cessna covers Texas A&M football, has been doing it for years for The Eagle, the newspaper in College Station, Texas. And he's joining us next, live on the line. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive tonight. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
NFL draft 4 weeks from tomorrow, round one. And on that day, on May 8th, there's a pretty good chance that not one, not two, but three players from Texas A&M University are going to hear their names called in the first round of the draft. Joining us live on the line, the executive sports editor of The Eagle, the newspaper in College Station, Texas. He was on with us a couple of months ago, and we're happy to have him back, Robert Cessna. Robert, thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
Hey, is this an embarrassment of riches for an A&M? Have they ever had three high-profile guys coming out in the same year like this?
No, we've talked about it before. It's amazing when on May 8th they expect to get three guys in the top 10 going to the SEC. It's been nothing but an uphill climb, so to speak. They haven't won a championship, but as far as being in the limelight, I mean, you can't beat that with Johnny Manziel. And what's kind of funny is what you guys are talking about. Johnny Manziel is in the forefront, but if you read the reports and you look at Mel Kiper's sensational seven, he's got Matthews and Evans there, not Manziel. When you look at the upside, and I think I've told you guys before, I'm a big Steeler fan, but I wish my Steelers could get Evans. But he's not going to be around by then. He's going to be gone. And then you look at Jake Matthews, considered the bloodline. I mean, just to have three guys like this on one team, and I feel a little bit bad for Evans and Matthews, because on other teams you get top billing. But when you got Johnny Manziel, kind of hard to get the headline.
Did I read this right, Robert? I know Manziel threw on a, I think it was a couple of Fridays ago at Pro Day at College Station, but was there an earlier Pro Day for the rest of the A&M guys? Do they have essentially two Pro Days?
They had a Pro Day, but you put a big asterisk beside it because the other guys didn't do anything. I mean, Evans and Manziel did nothing, and Matthews just did a couple things because they had nothing to prove. They did it all at the combine, and what's funny is, you talk about these three guys, but they're not going to have another guy drafted after that. It's like all or nothing. So it was like if you wanted to go see the real thing, you had to show either go to the combine or you had to show up for Manziel's day, because you're right. They, quote, had two pro days, but, of course, one was just Johnny Manziel, kind of like invitation only, a PMZ or whatever if you got your invitation. But no, just kidding. But we all were there. But it was quite a zoo. You're sitting there and I got there 2 hours before because I want to get a spot behind the rope, you know, one of the premier spots, and you're thinking, like, this is just insane. But that's what Johnny Manziel had done, and you got to enjoy it while you can, because guess what? He's gone on. He's taking his show on the road somewhere.
Robert Cessna joins us, executive sports editor of The Eagle, the newspaper in College Station, Texas, talking about those three prospects, Mike Evans, the receiver, Jake Matthews, the offensive lineman who was here today in Orchard Park. We'll talk about him in a moment, and the quarterback, Johnny Manziel. So you were there when Manziel threw back a couple of Fridays ago. It sounds like he wowed him. It sounds like there were oohs and ahs coming from the observers that day.
Well, what I got to laugh is, I mean, you got to give it to Johnny Manziel and his people. He comes out with the helmet on, the pads. People haven't done that before, and lo and behold, what do we see today? Zach Mettenberger's got the helmet on. He's got the pads. Johnny Manziel is a trendsetter. He was able to do that. Whether it was him or George Whitfield, it was ingenious. Everyone's going to do that now, but he definitely threw all the balls on the money. Did he have two incompletions or was one out of bounds? I mean, that's how good he was, but he also was throwing to Mike Evans, had good receivers, but he definitely looked, you know, he looked sensational. Hey, I'm not a pro scout. I'm sitting there. He looked good to me, but, you know, a lot of guys look good going against nobody. When you're looking at millions of dollars, that's somebody else is going to have to make those decisions. But, yeah, without a doubt, I mean, everyone was there saying, ooh, wow, you got the former president there. And like I said, Johnny Manziel, lights come on. He can do great things. But I also think those other two guys can too, because what Evans has been able to do in 2 years, just as same thing as Manziel, pretty special. So like I said, well, I think we'll be writing about these three guys at a distance, or else we'll be following three NFL teams very closely.
You mentioned George Whitfield, the kind of the quarterback guru for guys coming out in the draft. What has he been able to do for Manziel since his season ended? I mean, do you see any difference at all in Manziel's throwing motion or any kind of movement as a result of his work with George Whitfield?
Now, I can't see the difference in just being out there watching with those 64 balls from the end of the season, but from last year, you know, to this year, this past season, what he was able to do on those, like, 18-yard square-out patterns or what have you. The arm strength was there. The accuracy was there. He made great improvements, so I do have to give him credit for what he was able to do, whether it's running on the beach, getting his timing down. But from his junior year to his senior year, Manziel really threw the ball so much better. Now, some of that might have just been the maturity, the second year, but he definitely went out to San Diego a few times in that summer, so I got to give him credit. And I think more or less he was just, when you look at his footwork, you know, the NFL scouts said the way he came out. So I'm sure when you think about, yeah, there wasn't any defenders or whatever, but with so much riding on the line, it was just him. Every play looked pretty smooth, pretty crisp, like it was almost, of course, was orchestrated. But to do it just so precisely, and let's face it, Manziel's whole career has been what he's been able to do in freelance. And people wonder, will he be able to do that? He won't be able to do that in the NFL, so how's he going to do under center? He came out, he did everything under center. So once again, I think maybe if Whitfield was my agent, I'd get better pay when I go on and do shows or talk to my publisher, because I think George Whitfield's pretty good at what he does.
Hey, one more Manziel question for you, Robert. And you mentioned how he didn't show up in Mel Kiper's Super 7 or Top 7. It continues the trend of Manziel being a very polarizing figure going into this draft, isn't he? Some people love him, say he's number one overall. Some people, like Mel Kiper, don't include him in their Top 7.
Oh, without a doubt. And I thought that was coming. I was waiting for someone to come out like Jaworski did. I'm sitting here. This is home, so you know, everybody here lives and dies with Johnny Manziel. A lot of the fan, some of the fan base, and they want him to do well. Why wouldn't they want him to do well? But, you know, I saw RG3 come out of Baylor. I saw him in high school, this tremendous talent. And now when I'm watching the games on Sunday, because I got the ticket, I'm thinking, like, holy cow, there's linebackers pulling him down from behind, which I never thought would happen. When Johnny Manziel, I can't equate what just a smidgen under 6 foot guy going to do. Yeah, I watched Russell Wilson. We all did. But everyone's different. We see that, you know, every level you go from high school. I've covered a lot of great high school guys that are now went on and had great NFL careers and been in the business long enough. And we don't know. We just don't know what Johnny Manziel's going to do. But as far as the polarizing figure, what he's been able to do, wow. Can he go on and continue all that at the next level? I don't know. I hope the guy can, because I'll never cover another guy like him, obviously, but is he going to go do that at the next level? And that's why Kiper doesn't have him in there. And when Gil Brandt was down there, walk up to him, Gil Brandt said, hey, he's still number one in my rankings. He's by far the best prospect. So once again, you don't know. People don't. And man, if I was making that choice, yeah, I'd probably draft him. But once again, I've got a little bit of colored glass. I've seen him play for 2 years, so we'll see what happens.
On the line with Robert Cessna, who covers Texas A&M football for the Eagle down in College Station, Texas. A lot of interest here among Bills fans, at least, in Mike Evans. And one of the questions that comes up, Robert, is did Manziel make Evans, or was it vice versa?
Well, that's a really good question, because when you see the Alabama play, that, oh, man, this year put him back in the game and Manziel runs all the way down and celebrates. There's no doubt they both made each other millions. I wasn't the only one that thought this. As the season went on, particularly the last couple games, Manziel looked too much for Evans. When you have an All-American, you have that playmaker. But, you know, you can't blame Manziel for looking for Evans, because like those other receivers, Darrell Walker and Travis Laphart are not even going to be drafted. So why wouldn't you look for the All-American? But you got to go ahead and spread the wealth. Evans is just, I still think he's got an amazing upside considering his personality. He seems level-headed. He's at the ground level. He's just scraping the surface of what he can do. He has all those skills. And now we all question, would he have the speed? And, of course, he proved at the combine he's got the speed. And when we see what those hands, I mean, he just, you could see it at the Manziel's pro day. Every ball to him, it's just a vacuum. It was there. He caught it. I mean, he's got these huge hands. He's got all these skills. And like I said, you think, wow, what could? There's nothing really can hold this guy back from being an all-pro player. But once again, we'll see.
And lastly, the guy who was here today at One Bills Drive, the offensive tackle Jake Matthews, what can you tell us about him and how do you think he projects to the NFL?
Well, I think Jake Matthews, just being around him when they brought him in the interviews, you watch him. We all know you don't really pay attention to offensive linemen until they screw up. I always try to cover a high-profile program like this, 5-6 plays a game. I like to put the glasses on certain offensive linemen just to see where they're at, what they're doing. With Jake Matthews, once again, I just think you get a solid product. The guy knows what he's supposed to do. He's got the genes. He's got the talent. He's got the temperament. He's going to be an all-pro guy off the field, maybe more so than on the field. He's going to do exactly what the coaches want. And, you know, you think about today's world, unfortunately, that's just not a given. I mean, everything that he's going to do, he's going to be great for your program, whoever gets him. Will he be flashy? No, but he's going to get his job done, and he's going to move you forward. And, I just can't say enough for all the Matthews boys that came through here because they're all like cookie cutters. I mean, they grew up with NFL football. They understand what it's about from Pee Wee the whole way until they retire and sit in one of those huge love seats that they have in their house. They got so many made for them because they're just linemen. They just know what they're going to do, and they're football players.
Robert, we appreciate your time tonight. Thank you very much. Going to be a big day for the Aggies on May 8th, and we thank you for setting us up for that.
Hey, no problem. Y'all take care.
Okay, Robert Cessna, the executive sports editor of The Eagle, the newspaper that covers Texas A&M football in College Station, Texas. Always good insights on the three of them, Johnny Manziel, Mike Evans, Jake Matthews. One of them, I mean, Matthews was here today. You got to believe the Bills are interested. You got to figure they're interested in Mike Evans as well. One of them could wind up on the Buffalo Bills roster. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Robert Cessna, thanks to him, the executive sports editor of The Eagle, the newspaper in College Station that covers Texas A&M football. Three of them. He's right, maybe in the top 10. Three players in the top 10. That's never happened there. I don't know if it's ever happened anywhere else before when you think about it in the NFL draft. NFL draft coming up, and we're going to talk more about it at 8 o'clock with Kevin Weidel, who covers the NFL draft for ESPN. He works closely with Todd McShay. He works closely with Todd McShay at ESPN, and Kevin Weidel does his own research, former scout for a couple of different NFL teams. And at 8:30 tonight, Ivan Reitman, the director of the movie Draft Day, which is coming out on Friday. By the way, all of the callers tonight that we put on the air are going to get two passes to the pre-screening of the movie Draft Day tomorrow night. It's only good for tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at Regal Quaker Crossing in Orchard Park on Mile Strip Road, the movie starring Kevin Costner and Jennifer Garner. All of the callers we put on the air are going to get their name on a list, and they'll be invited in to the pre-screening tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And that includes our next caller, Butch, from the East Side. Hey, Butch, you got to turn your radio down, Butch. Oh, Butch, he's a veteran caller. How does he not know that? How does he not know to turn down the radio? You would think of all callers, Butch would be the guy that would know that. Wanted to remind you, we talked a lot about the schedule. We'll continue that discussion. And you are invited to take part in the Buffalo Bills Schedule Challenge on our website, buffalobills.com. A chance to predict the schedule for the 2014 Buffalo Bills. And there's nothing locked in. I know there have been reports in the last few days about Monday night games at home against Green Bay, reports about Thanksgiving Day game at Detroit. None of that is locked in. Nobody knows. The schedule is still a couple of weeks from being completed, and nobody knows. I don't think there are folks walking around the building here at One Bills Drive who are certain about those days. There are people walking around here at One Bills Drive who say that probably might not happen. So it's all up in the air is what I'm trying to say. And if you have a conviction on how you think it will go, make sure you enter the Buffalo Bills Schedule Challenge. You register online at buffalobills.com. Got to be 18 or older to play. You try to predict the 2014 Bills schedule week by week, the exact order of all 16 games and the bye week. And then you check back when the schedule is announced in a couple of weeks, see how you've done. If you correctly predict the 2014 Bills schedule, you win season tickets for life. And the person who correctly predicts the most games wins season tickets for 2014. Go to BuffaloBills.com to enter. All the contest rules are there, and they'll show you exactly what you need to do. BuffaloBills.com, the schedule challenge. If you have a feeling about where the schedule is going, you know, put it down on paper, at least put it down in cyberspace, and maybe you get something good out of it. Nobody knows. I saw the report, Fox Sports Wisconsin, read it. I saw the kind of misconstrued reports about possible Thanksgiving Day game at Detroit. Nobody knows. It's all up in the air. Believe me, it's all up in the air. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll talk more about the draft, in particular offensive linemen. Get your questions ready for Kevin Weidel. He is a draft expert for ESPN and ESPN.com, and he'll join us live when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like that kind of party, baby!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop CJ Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
Let's go sometime.
Hey, hold on. Let's go. Check it out.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show coming up at the bottom of the hour. Ivan Reitman, famous, legendary, iconic Hollywood producer, director. He directed the movie Draft Day that's coming out Friday. And Ivan Reitman's going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk about that movie and how that movie almost got made right here at One Bills Drive. 4 weeks from tomorrow, the NFL Draft Round 1. We're going to talk a lot about the draft over the next month or so. And one of our favorite guys to talk to about the draft is joining us right now. He is a college football and NFL draft analyst for ESPN, former college football quarterback, worked in the pro scouting department for the New York Jets, and he's been with Scouts, Inc. for the last 7 years. He's been with ESPN, working closely with Todd McShay for most of that time. Kevin Weidel joins us live on the line. Hi, Kevin. How are you tonight?
John, doing great, man. How you doing today, man?
You're doing great. Thanks for coming on. Are you doing a regular thing on ESPNU, did I see? Kind of a run-up to the draft? Did you do one today, as a matter of fact?
Yeah. College football spring blitz. It usually we cover, you know, position a day through April here. It's going to talk about a couple players coming out for the draft, and then we'll talk about the talent coming back, college football next fall. It's a half-an-hour show, quick and easy, and get a lot of info. So that'll be going on through the month of April here.
So you're on there every day. We'll look for that on ESPN. Is it always 4:30 p.m. then?
4:30, yep, that's the scheduled time.
Okay. As I said, Kevin, we're about 4 weeks away from tomorrow, 4 weeks from round one. I read something that you tweeted out a couple of days ago where you said that there's a consensus building among personnel people in the NFL that the pushback of the draft by a couple of weeks this year has drawn this process out too long. Tell us what's going on in inside personnel departments.
Well, you know, I already think it was already too long as it was. From the time the season ends, the bowl season, to the draft was already long enough. Now they pushed it back 2 weeks, and they're going to push it back another week next year, I heard, in the mid-May. And I just think, you know, mistakes can be made in that area. You know, sometimes teams, you know, and scouts can forget about the tape and start looking at pro days and start looking at all-star games and the combine, and that's everything that's what's fresh in your mind. And then you start hearing all the rumors flying around and you read on social media, and you can get distracted. I think it's a lot of times it's a lot of risk for overanalysis. And, you know, that's when you start flip-flopping. And usually when you watch a tape and you watch a player and you get through three game tapes, you have an initial feeling and you've got a gut feeling. Usually your gut feeling is right. So that's what I always try to do. I always try to stick to the tape. And then you check on the guy's character, work ethic to make sure it's clean. And if it all matches up and you get a good vibe from the tape and the background check, then I think you have a pretty strong hold on the guy's grade. So I just think it's, you know, there's a chance with all the time in between to overanalyze and kind of nitpick at players when initially you had it right watching tape. So that's the concern I have.
We're in the pro day season and transitioning into team visits. So what do you think goes on, Kevin, at these pro days and team visits? What are scouts looking for when they bring these players in?
just how they handle it. You know, the pro days are different. You know, you want to show up, and it's supposed to be your kind of day to showcase what you can do in shorts and a T-shirt. And that's, you know, football's not playing that, obviously. It's like being on the driving range, you know. You look great, and then you get on the first tee, and you shank the ball to the right. So, you know, when the high, they want to see when the high-pressure situation is going on. I think more importantly, the private visits are the most important, because that's when they get to, you know, teams will take quarterback, for an example. You know, teams will put them through the throws that they make in their scheme. Can they make it? How's their mobility? They'll put them on the whiteboard, see if they can learn the process. If they have a good grasp on coverages, reads, particularly within their system. And then they get to know him as a person, you know, as a leader, you know, as a guy. Does he have a presence to him when he walks in the room? Does he have a big presence? Does he tilt the room? Those are some of the things they really look for, and they just get to know the player more. Particularly with quarterbacks, I think it's important to learn what makes these guys tick and what, you know, internally they have and bring to the table.
Hey, Kevin, the Bills virtually have players coming in every day now. Today they had tackle Jake Matthews from Texas A&M and linebacker Preston Brown. As fans, as people who follow the draft, what should we read into those visits to One Bills Drive? Does that automatically mean that they are high on the team's draft board?
No, you know, they have some interest. It just depends on where they are. You know, they have a guy targeted, I think, that to fit their system and fit what they do, and they have a certain position for them, and they have a target area. So should he be there? In the round that they have him checked out at the grades, you know, they want to get to know this person. Again, it's bringing guys in. Obviously, there's an interest, and they want to see, you know, what this guy's about. So, you know, you're not just going to bring in a guy that you don't like. I can tell you that. You want to see what these guys are about, and if it's a fit and it's at the right point, you know, and you brought them in for a visit, then, you know, it's all checks out, and you turn in the card.
We're live on the line with Kevin Weidel. He is a college football and NFL draft analyst for ESPN. If you have a comment or a question for Kevin about the draft, now's your chance. He'll be with us the next few minutes here. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. And we wanted to get to talking about some of the offensive line prospects, and actually a caller does as well. Mark from New Jersey, you're on the air with Kevin Weidel. Mark, go ahead.
Hi, John. How you doing? Yeah, I wanted to ask him, how big of a variance is there between the Greg Robinson, Jake Matthews, you know, Taylor Lewan, and the next tier, like Morgan Moses and Antonio Richardson? Also, I believe the last time he was on, I asked him about Cody Latimer, and I've noticed that he's even visited the Bills, and he's been rising pretty fast, and I wanted to get his take, because he said he didn't watch that much tape on him
as of yet. Two good questions, Kevin.
Yeah, no problem. Just looking at the tackles, Greg Robinson, you know, I'll put it this way. It's the easiest way to put it. I watched Greg Robinson, and then I watched Jake Matthews. And Jake Matthews is a really, really good football player. But after watching Greg Robinson, it was hard to get excited, because Greg Robinson is massive. Greg Robinson is one of the more agile, athletic, and naturally powerful offensive linemen that I've ever evaluated. Jake Matthews, a little bit more undersized, doesn't have the length. More of a technician, needs to get it done with his footwork and technique. But at the same time, he's got the bloodlines, he's got the intelligence. I think those two are right there. I don't think there's a huge gap between Lewan and Morgan Moses. The more I watch Morgan Moses, the more I feel comfortable about him being a left tackle. Now, is that necessarily a great fit for Buffalo? I don't know. I think they're looking more for a right tackle. Now, Morgan Moses struggled a little bit in 2012 when he was at right tackle his first three seasons. He appeared much more natural to left tackle. When you saw the growth from the second game of the season against Oregon, even to Virginia Tech at the left tackle, and when you watch that final game against Virginia Tech, extremely impressed with the way he progressed throughout the season, improved in terms of footwork, in terms of patience in his set, playing with more of an edge. I think he's got a chance to be a really, really good starting left tackle at the next level. Antonio Richardson, not as high as those other guys. I see more third round, to be honest with you. I don't think he bends particularly well. He's wide. He's got a big frame. But I really got concerns about the stiffness in his lower body and a bit of a waist bender, and can really struggle with some speed and rushers that are able to counter from outside to inside. So, you know, let's hope that answers the question. Cody Lattimore. This guy, let me tell you something, I have been extremely impressed. Me and Todd had a chance to watch five games of him last week. I mean, we were up till 2:30 in the morning because we wanted to watch another game of Lattimore. We were so excited. He is one of the better, I would say he's a very good route runner, has a natural feel for the position. I think he's got one of the best sets of hands in this class. Through five games, I did not see him drop a pass. I think he's tough. I think he's underrated after the catch. I think he's a possession-type receiver that at 6'2", 6'3", 215 pounds, reminds me a lot of Akeem Nix coming out of the New York Giants. I think he's in that, I think Lattimore's in that second-round range right now. And as a guy that's certainly, from what I'm hearing from talking to people in the league and from what I'm seeing on tape, it's definitely a hot name that's on the rise right now.
Yeah, that's a big jump. I mean, a month or so ago, people probably put him in the fourth or fifth round area, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing, Judd. You know, 98 guys coming out this year, it's a lot to catch up on. You know, and fortunately for these teams and for us as well, you know, the draft is pushed back 2 weeks, you know, at this particular point, because there's so many underclassmen. Teams are trying to catch up, and I think they're finally getting to the juniors tape, and that's why it's late. And now you're starting to see that wave once these scouts really start watching their tape. And then the pro day that Lattimore had, he clocked in the high 4.4s. I think he verticaled 39 inches at 6'3", 215 pounds. So, you know, that obviously helps and gets the hype machine going a little bit as well.
On the line with Kevin Weidel, who is a college football and NFL draft analyst for ESPN. He's with us for a couple of more minutes. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. I want to take you back to the offensive lineman for a second, Kevin, and ask you about the guy from Nevada, Joel Bitonio. What do you think of him? Third rounder or maybe even better than that?
I think he's a mid-second rounder. I think he's a starter. I do. I think he's a guy that can potentially be a starter. You know, it's 6'4", 302 pounds. He's got longer arms, almost 34-inch arms. So, you know, 6'4", you're a little bit concerned about that, but the longer arms, you know, kind of eases that concern a little bit. I think he's got ability to play right tackle. I do. I think you bring him in and you try him out at right tackle, similar to a Justin Pugh from last year of Syracuse. He's just a really tough, scrappy kid that knows how to maintain leverage. He's got a strong inline power base, and he's a guy that's feisty. He gave Anthony Barr all he could handle in the UCLA tape, and I think if he doesn't work out at right tackle, I think you got a really good starting, and you bump him inside, and you got a really good starting guard for the next 10 years. So Bitonio is a guy that I really was impressed with his tape when I had a chance to watch it finally last week.
Hey, Kevin, in an effort to, you know, let people know kind of what you're talking about, what do you mean when you say a strong inline power base? What do scouts mean when they say that?
Well, it just means, you know, in his rear end, Murph, you know, the size, the strength and the power to move defenders, to steer defenders at the point of attack off the ball and kind of open up those running lanes. So that's what I talk about. I know it's a little bit of scouts, and I'll try to generalize the term. That's some scout speak, but just in terms of, you know, his run-blocking strength to move defenders off the ball and open up running lanes is what I would say about an inline power base.
No, I don't mind the scout jargon if you don't mind me stopping you and asking you about it, Kevin. Is that all right?
That's no problem at all.
You know, you reminded me when you said that, there was the old college scouting director here, Dwight Adams, used to talk about offensive linemen having a power pack. I think that's what you're talking about, right?
Hey, Murph, it's your show, man. Good conductor over there.
Kevin Weidel is our guest from ESPN. He covers the NFL draft. A call from Peter in Glenwood. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi. How's it going?
Good.
I have a question. With the pickup of Mike Williams earlier in the week for the Bills, does that point to them being more likely to be focusing on the line, or would they be more willing now to trade back and pick up extra picks, knowing that the tackle depth isn't as deep after the first two or three prospects?
That's an interesting question. I think the acquisition of Mike Williams kind of changed the way many of us were thinking about the Bills, Kevin, and maybe it changed the way the Bills are thinking about the draft, huh?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I still think a guy like Mike Evans out of Texas A&M could be in consideration at 9. Now you got some real weapons for E.J. Manuel to work with, Robert Woods and Mike Williams on the outside. I think Eric Ebron, you know, I'm not sure where they have him on their board, but I would imagine, you know, it would help out E.J. Manuel at 9. You know, I think he's the best pass-catching tight end. But, you know, I also think if you get a guy like Jake Matthews fall to you, I think you jump all over it. I just think it's going to come down to, you know, who's on the board. And knowing Doug Whaley, like I do, I think they're going to take the best player available. You know, they do a great job. They work hard and they do their homework. So, you know, they have their needs and they have their fits, but I also don't think if there's a a need or a guy that fits a need and you're reaching a little bit, I think they're going to pass and take a better player available just to help themselves out.
Kevin, this is why you're a great guy to follow on Twitter, and if anybody's interested, you can go to @KevinW_ESPN, because you come up with these little gems. I read something you wrote recently about the search for bigger cornerbacks. It's a trend all over the NFL. Teams going into this draft are going to look for big physical corners now, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's in vogue, Murph. I think with this day and age, the NFL is trending more of a passing league, and I think the wide receiver position is more transcendent than it's ever been. I mean, you're looking at guys like Calvin Johnson. You're looking at guys like Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall, Demaryius Thomas. I could go on and on. I mean, these guys are huge. They look more like a basketball roster than they do a receiver. You know, so you better have the guys. You know, you can have those smaller guys that can stick with them, but when the ball's in the air, these guys are able to separate late and use their size to their advantage, and these smaller, you know, corners, I hear a lot of scouts call them Muppets, they just can't hold up. That's why I think they're looking for bigger corners. They're almost, you know, teams are looking to counter this. And, you know, some teams will sacrifice a little bit of fluidity and movement skills and a little bit in terms of top-end speed for those bigger corners. Because let me tell you something, guys like Richard Sherman, you know, he's not the most fluid, doesn't have the fluid motion and isn't the best cover corner, but what he does do is he goes to the line of scrimmage, he's big, he's physical, and when he gets his hands on you, he's got the ability to turn a 4-4 receiver into a 4-6 receiber real quick. So I think those are what the teams are looking to do, is get those bigger corners that can match up, particularly with the bigger guys. And look, it's not going to change. You got guys like Kelvin Benjamin and Mike Evans coming in the league, Martavis Bryant. So, you know, you're still going to have these bigger physical receivers. You just got to have, you know, the longer corners, I think, to hold up on the island with these guys down the field.
That's a pretty interesting trend. A call here from Rob in Cheektowaga. Hi, Rob. Welcome. You're on the air.
How are you doing, guys? I got questions about two different players. The first is Taylor Lewan. How big of a red flag are these character questions that we're hearing about? That's one. And then the other question is, if there are no receivers or tackles, it seems like maybe receivers a little bit less on the board for the Bills. But say if the tackles are gone and they're not interested in Lewan, how would Anthony Barr fit in Schwartz's defense? Is he a possibility, or does he just not fit our system?
Okay, two good questions. Taylor Lewan, he was asked about the fight at Michigan. I don't know, is that a serious matter? I guess it's not going to even be adjudicated until after the draft now. That's what I read the other day, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, I think with an offensive line, it's a fight. They'll do their homework. But, I mean, he's an offensive lineman. You would hope he's a little aggressive, you know. Obviously, that's not the way to go off the field. But, you know, I think there's a lot worse things, put it that way, John, than getting in a fight in college. But, you know, they'll do their homework. To me, I think Taylor Lewan's a left tackle. You know, when you look at him, I just wonder if he's a fit as a right tackle. And knowing Buffalo, I think they're looking for a right tackle, and I don't know if he's a great fit because he's more of a technician, more of a finesse guy that's going to get in front, move his feet, and keep his hands inside in great position than he is a guy that's going to, you know, come off the ball and beat you with power and speed. So, that's a tough transition as well. So it'll be interesting to see. For Anthony Barr, I'm not as high as other people are on him. I know there's a lot of people that have him in the top 10 picks. I really have a struggle to pull the trigger on him in the first round. Just personally, I see a guy that's a little bit too finesse for me. When you're looking at guys in the front seven, especially the edge defenders, I want guys that are playing with more aggression, a little more violence, if you will, on the edge. And then as a pass rusher, I see the speed off the edge, but I don't see a guy that transitions speed to power very well. I think he stalls out a lot against bigger tackles. And I don't see a guy that particularly bends well either in the torso. So, to me, I think he's a little bit of a project, only 3 years playing defense, 2 years playing defense, excuse me. And to me, I feel a lot more comfortable about Anthony Barr on day two than I would spending a first-round pick, let alone a top-10 pick on him.
I got a question about a quarterback who, if I'm reading your tweets correctly, Kevin, it seems like you're kind of, his stock is dropping. Teddy Bridgewater out of Louisville. You've come up with some questions about him that I read that you wrote about recently.
Yeah, I've talked to some people in the league, and I got a chance to watch a couple more tapes 2 days ago. Murph, I watched the Memphis tape. I got into the Houston tape and the Kentucky tape, you know. And these are the competition he's playing as number one. But, you know, he can only play his schedule. You know, I got concerns about the frame, obviously, the longevity, the durability. He's got very narrow bone structure in terms of shoulders, ankles, hips, you know, wrists. So, you know, that always brings a concern, but I just don't see a guy that's got a very strong arm. I think it's very average. And just looking at his growth potential, projecting to the next level. Now, don't get me wrong. I think he's a very good quarterback. I think he's accurate. I think he's smart. I just wonder how much he's got room to grow. Is he maxed out? What's his feeling? I just feel a lot more comfortable with a guy like Blake Bortles, who is 6'5", 230. He's got mobility. And I think he can really improve his arm strength and has a higher ceiling than I do Bridgewater. I think Bridgewater has a chance to be a very good starting quarterback at the next level, but I think good is where you max it out in the ceiling. Where I think a guy like Bortles, who's got it mentally and has got the presence and the and everything else you want, and the upside in terms of the mobility and the strength and the size, I just feel a lot comfortable. I think that guy can be a really franchise quarterback, develop into a franchise quarterback for you. Now, do I think he's there right now? No. I think he needs development, but I just would go with the guy that's got the higher ceiling at this point. Where I do think Bridgewater might be a little bit better at this point, I think Bortles has a higher ceiling projecting to the next level.
Could Bortles go number one overall to Houston, Kevin?
It's a possibility, you know. I'd have a problem if you feel comfortable. Phillip Bryant feels comfortable with a guy like Bortles. You know, I could see it, but I also would be really, really hard. It'd be really hard for me to pass up a guy like Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
I also think there's some guys in day two that, you know, Phillip Bryant might have his eye on, guys like Jimmy Garoppolo. He could develop. Even Tom Savage is creating some noise. Tom Savage, a guy I think has the strongest arm in this class, can make some throws that none other in this class can make. Played behind a very poor offensive line, hasn't had a ton of reps. I mean, you got to remember, before the season, didn't play for 2 years because he transferred from Rutgers, went to Arizona. They hired Rich Rod out there, and it wasn't a great fit in that zone read system, so he transferred to Pitt and had to sit another year. So, you know, he's a guy that's creating a lot of buzz right now just talking with coaches and scouts. So it'll be interesting to see. Hey, I think it comes down to Bortles. I think it comes down to Clowney with number one pick for the Texans. And to me, I at this point, I really lean towards Clowney. I think that's the way they're going
to
go.
Always comes back to the quarterbacks, doesn't it, Kevin? We'll have more time to talk about guys like Savage, and you mentioned Garoppolo, my favorite player going into this draft. I hope we can talk again before the draft. We'll talk to you again maybe in a week or so. Is that okay, Kevin?
Yeah, sounds good, Murph. Hey, if Casey gets out of line, you got my permission to...
All right, I will. Casey, your brother, working here in the Bills video department. Kevin Weidel, you can see his work on ESPNU 430 from now until the draft. He's a college football and NFL draft expert for ESPN. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, the famous movie director, producer Ivan Reitman, he produced Animal House. He produced and directed Ghostbusters, and he's director of Draft Day, the movie, which comes out on Friday. Ivan Reitman on the line with us when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
That's the music from the new movie Draft Day in theaters this Friday. And we have live on the line with us right now the director of the movie Draft Day, Ivan Reitman. Ivan, thank you very much for being on with us tonight. We really appreciate it.
It's a real pleasure to speak to the people of Buffalo. And first of all, apologize that we didn't get a chance to shoot it in your beautiful city. But we try to show it in the best light, I hope you agree.
Yeah, you came close to shooting it here. Tell us that story, Ivan, about almost shooting the movie here in Buffalo at One Bills Drive.
Yeah, well, you know, I came out, I scouted it, I liked it a lot. I think the history of Buffalo was really appropriate to the story. In fact, the writer Scott Rodman and Rajiv Joseph wrote it, setting it in Buffalo for the Kevin Costner character. But we were really fighting a very tight budget, and the story also worked with the Cleveland Browns, who also, you know, have even a more sorry history, unfortunately. than the Bills. And because of the movie give back that's now available in Ohio, there was like a $3 million differential, which was a substantial amount for our budget. And there was no way for us to stay in Buffalo, unfortunately.
Ivan, what was it about the Bills franchise or eventually the Browns franchise that made it necessary to have that sort of history, that sort of franchise involved in the movie Draft Day?
Well, both cities have wonderful fan bases who have sort of stuck with their teams through thick and thin, mostly thin, unfortunately. I know the Bills had a few years there where they got into the Super Bowl and unfortunately lost. In a heartbreaking fashion. So in that way, it worked very well for us. And, you know, with the Browns, with the team moving out of the city, losing it for 9 years, having had no success, that made the sort of storyline work very well for either of the cities. Plus, they're kind of Rust Belt East Coast towns with a big industrial side to them that have seen somewhat better days, that are trying to make a comeback right now. So I think all these, and they're cities, but not too big. So all those things I thought were appropriate for the story.
Yeah, I've seen interviews that you've done and that Kevin Costner have done about the movie Draft Day, in which you've said it was crucial to have real NFL teams, real NFL logos, real NFL involvement in this film. Why was that so essential, Ivan?
Well, I can't see doing a movie called Draft Day about the draft without actually using the NFL. I wanted to be able to shoot in the city when the draft is going on. I wanted to use real personalities and, most importantly, real teams, you know, with real uniforms. Because, you know, look, we try to get this movie right. We try to get all the details. At its heart, it's this great sports drama with comedy that gets you very emotionally twisted by the end of it. And it's like going to some kind of championship game where you're not quite sure what the outcome is, but it all happens off the field. And I thought it was very important that all the touchstones that fans have come to expect from football and from all their great sports teams were shown here.
We're with Ivan Reitman, the director of the new movie Draft Day, that's in theaters this Friday. Ivan, I know you spent a large portion of your young years in Toronto. You went to school right down the road in Hamilton at McMaster. Where, are you familiar with Buffalo or the Buffalo Bills from that exposure?
Yes, and of course I've seen where the Bills have come in to do kind of some of their local games right in the city. Yep. I'm not so sure that's such a good thing for Buffalo, but it's. But it is building, I guess, a Canadian awareness of the great game.
Ivan, the movie stars Kevin Costner. How has he become the go-to guy for American sports movies?
Well, he's this, like, wonderfully all-American guy. He reminds me of those great film stars of the past, like Gary Cooper, who you knew you could trust. The sound of his voice is very comforting. He's the kind of guy who can lead you into battle. There's a dignity about him, and there's just sort of a know-how, which happens to be real, about various sports, particularly baseball and football, for Kevin. And so it just was really appropriate, and he's really smart about it.
You know, there's obviously there's some great stars in the movie, Jennifer Garner and Dennis Leary. A couple of character actors who caught my eye, guys who I really love their work, and I just wonder if you can talk about Kevin Dunn, who you've worked with before, and Timothy Simons, who I guess has a small role in the film as well.
Yeah. Well, he's on screen a lot. Tim Simons, so, again, I try to find people who sound like they belong in the war room, in the football war room. I didn't want guys who sounded like actors from L.A., no matter where they may have come from. So I was just looking for a kind of a reality, and Tim Simons has that, as does Kevin Dunn. It's the reason when I did the movie Dave, I used him. I've used him about three times now. I love him as an actor. And I just, sound, voices are very important, and the way that people look, that they look like they come from a real place in America, not from Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of both those guys. You also had a couple of our very own Bill staffers, I guess. I see them on the credits, Russ Brandon and Mark Honan, a couple of big executives here for the Bills. They have speaking roles. What kind of roles do they have, Ivan?
Well, Russ definitely has a speaking role, and you know, I got to meet him when we were researching the film and when we were checking out Buffalo and the facilities in Buffalo, and he was extraordinarily helpful and very helpful with the script as well in terms of pointing out if there was anything inaccurate or what was possible. You know, we try to do that with everything, not only with the NFL, with coaches, with rookies who've gone through that experience, you know, and Brannon was just really, really helpful. And he said, you know, I'm a huge fan of your old movies like Stripes, and I hope you would consider me for one of the roles. I said, Russ, you got it. You're in the picture whether we go with Buffalo or not. And he actually represents, he looks like the CEO. He plays the CEO of the Buffalo Bills in a very nice negotiation scene. That I know we've shown it to the Bills already, and they seem very happy.
That sounds like fun. Nate, obviously, you mentioned some of your previous work, Stripes, Meatballs. You were a producer in 1978 of National Lampoon's Animal House. Ivan, I had a conversation with my 22-year-old son the other day who was extolling the virtues of Judd Apatow, who obviously is very talented. But I tried to tell him, without Animal House, there is no Judd Apatow and several other movies. Do you agree? I mean, and it's kind of silly to say it, but Animal House was an important picture in where Hollywood went the last 30, 35 years.
Yeah, I think Animal House was this kind of Teutonic shift where we went from kind of the comedy voices of the war generation to the post-war generation, the baby boom generation. And it just created a new way of doing comedy in films and a new kind of language. And I think it continued from there. I mean, it was sort of definitive for the 80s. And, you know, Judd Apatow is remarkably talented. He's a really fine director and producer and writer. And, you know, I know him a little bit, and he's been very friendly. And he's always nice about giving me credit. And I think, you know, he's invented his own sort of next step.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Animal House. I read Maddie Simmons' book a year or so ago, Fat, Drunk, and Stupid, I think is the title of the book. But there's a remarkable story in there about, I think you and your family spent Thanksgiving during the shoot with John Belushi. Is that right?
That's correct. While we were shooting, Belushi and his wife Judy had a wonderful Thanksgiving dinner for most of the cast. And, it was really one of my favorites. It was a nice time to sort of stop and think about what we were doing. I think we were all very excited that we were doing something unique and special, and that was going to work, even though at that moment we were totally unknown. We were a small movie. By the way, on draft day, we had much similar feelings. There was an esprit de corps when we were making it together where everybody concerned just had this sort of feeling that somehow it was going to work, even though it was this tiny movie that that nobody really knew about. And so I've got my fingers crossed that this Friday is the beginning of a special run for us.
Question about draft day. Ivan Reitman, the director, is on the line with us. It occurs to me, Ivan, that the NFL draft is like almost the ultimate reality show. It's like The Bachelor, except in the end, instead of getting a rose, you get an NFL jersey. Would you agree?
Well, it's this life-changing moment, really, for hundreds of college players who've been sort of working day and night since they were little kids to this moment where they hope they're going to make it. And it's a day of good news and, unfortunately, for most people, a day of bad news. You know, there's only about, you know, 250 draftees that are selected that day, and then there's thousands of kids who don't make it. And even for people who are sort of, who get on and who are expected to go on, sometimes they drop. Sometimes they go earlier than they expect, which is great. It's just this extraordinary event where, also the NFL selects 20 people that they think are to go in the first round, and then actually invites them to New York, where they come with their families, their girlfriends, and they're actually backstage at these round tables in a green room that's literally just a curtain away from the 4,000 people that are in that theater. And, you know, they're sitting there waiting for it to happen, and they don't really know. And it's full of media. So as this happened a number of times, where particularly a quarterback just keeps dropping from an expected top five spot to second or third round. It's really rough.
Ivan, what was your favorite part about making the movie Draft Day?
I love sort of getting to know some of the professionals in the industry, particularly the behind-the-scenes people, starting with the people who are at the draft themselves, who are extraordinarily kind to us and helpful, and sort of laying out all the, you know, the mechanics of what it is. Most people don't really quite understand how it happens, how they know when a trade happens and how a trade is confirmed and how, you know, where people are. It's really quite elaborate what goes on, and it's quite old school with people writing names down on a paper and holding them up in the auditorium and having it run to a team, you know, to the officials table where it gets checked out. It was all that. It was just fascinating to get to be part of this extraordinary and important event to all sports fans in America.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing it this week, Ivan. We thank you very much for spending time with us on the show tonight. Good luck with this.
Thank you so much.
Ivan Reitman, the director of the new movie, Draft Day. It is, as he said, it was scheduled originally to be shot here at One Bills Drive in Buffalo, wound up being shot primarily in Cleveland. There are, Russ Brandon is in it, Mark Honan is in it, and there are some Buffalo connections, so you want to catch a Draft Day in theaters this Friday. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Got a kick out of talking to Ivan Reitman. Our thanks to him, and good luck to his movie, Draft Day, the preview. By the way, tonight, if we take your phone call, we use it on the air, we will put your name on the list for tomorrow's pre-screening of Draft Day, the movie. You got to be there. You got to go to Regal Quaker Crossing, 7 p.m. tomorrow. And these are not like lifetime passes. It is only tomorrow's pre-screening, but we'll have two passes for you for tomorrow at Regal Quaker Crossing, just off the 219 on Mile Strip Road in Orchard Park, right around the corner here from the stadium. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, two passes for you if we use your call on the air to the pre-screening of Draft Day, the movie. The movie opens on Friday. Call here from Brian in Buffalo. Hi, Brian. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, John. That was a really cool interview with Ivan Reitman.
Thank you.
And I don't know if a lot of people realize just how influential people like he and Harold Ramis were in the late 70s and early 80s with movies like Animal House, like Stripes, like Meatballs, and like Ghostbusters. He's a big deal, and it was neat to hear you know, some of the behind the scenes things about them filming this movie here. And I also think it's a real shame that our local and state governments couldn't quite get that production you know, over the hump to be filmed in Western New York, because you know, as you know, people may be familiar with the Buffalo Niagara Film Commission, this is a great place to shoot a movie, and we gotta figure out better ways to attract more productions to be filmed here.
All right. Yeah, I agree with you, Brian. It is a shame. In the trailer for the movie Draft Day, there's a flyover, a great shot, a flyover of Ralph Wilson Stadium. Obviously, they didn't shoot much of the movie here. I think just a little bit. I don't even know if they shot anything here. They did use Russ Brandon. But you see the flyover, and the stadium here looks so great in just a couple of seconds shot on the trailer for the movie. I'm sure it's included in the movie itself. It is a shame. The place looks great. This place looks great when it's all dressed up. Couple of notes. We haven't really dealt with the news of the day, but the Bills' preseason schedule came out today without dates, but we know who and where and when, for the most part. Of course, they start with a Hall of Fame game against the Giants in Canton, Ohio, on Sunday, August 3rd, 8 p.m. kickoff. Week one of preseason, following weekend, they're on the road at Carolina. Week two, the following weekend after that, they're on the road at Pittsburgh. And then they finally come home week three, and you would anticipate that's in anticipation of all the stadium renovations being complete by week three of the preseason, home to play Tampa Bay. And then week four, the Detroit Lions at Ralph Wilson Stadium. So the first three games away from home in the preseason, the final two games at home, the regular season schedule still a couple of weeks away. The Bills signed a punter today. We neglected to mention that. They signed free agent Jake Dombrowski from Harvard. Appeared in 31 games for the Crimson there, native of Gaylord, Michigan. He did go to camp with, I believe, Jacksonville, but did not make the team, and he will come to camp to compete with Brian Moorman. Jake Dombrowski signed to the Bills roster today. And they had a couple of rookies in for visits today, including offensive lineman Jake Matthews. He could be the right fit at right tackle for the Bills. 3-year starter for Texas A&M. We talked about him earlier in the show. Jake Matthews, 6'5", 307 pounds. They also had linebacker Preston Brown, a 3-year starter at his school. Preston Brown from Louisville played for 3 years there, led the team in tackles, 6'1", 251 run stuffer. Those two players in for visits today, and more expected tomorrow. If you're interested in the draft, you want to check out BuffaloBills.com. Chris Brown and I continue with our Path to the Draft video segment. Today, Alabama linebacker C.J. Mosley is up, and then tomorrow, Austin Seferian Jenkins, the tight end from University of Washington, will be at BuffaloBills.com. You can check it out and get a look at some of these draft prospects that you hear us talking about all the time. That's going to do it for us. We're on the podcast tomorrow night, final podcast of the year tomorrow night, and then back with 2 hours of live radio on Friday. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer, Mike Jafari, our producer, Jay Harris, and the Bills director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. Podcast tomorrow, The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.